Tell us a happy story, Brett.
I'll tell you my two favorite jokes by comedians. These are not my original jokes, but I'll retell them. All right, the first one is David Angelo, who I hope to maybe have on my show someday. Boy, these Eskimos, and he's very, very dry. These Eskimos.
You know, the Eskimos, they have their own sign language. You know that? Eskimos?
Yeah, they hold up a sign. Please help me. Need soup.
No, I'll do the punchlines
okay.
here. This is a setup.
Okay, I didn't know that. You never know with
The Eskimos have their own version of sign language. Like we have American Sign Language, but in Eskimo, you can see the difference in our cultures because Eskimos have over 40 different ways to sign, "I can't understand you with your mittens on." Folks.
Hey, everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is March 15th, and my guest is David Angelo. You've heard me mention David Angelo before, and I refer to him as one of my favorite comedians. What you heard at the very beginning of the show there, a little clip I found of myself, because this is neat. This is a neat thing for me. That was on Sex, Lies, and Anarchy podcast sometime last year, when I was asked to end an episode that I was on a positive note. So I pulled out a couple of my favorite jokes. One of them was David Angelo's. Then I hunted down my old iPod and found the original telling of that joke, as far as I know. It was in 2007 on a program called the Red Bar Radio Show, which you've also heard me mention. David was a co-host of Red Bar. He left the show in 2007, and I didn't really keep track of him. I would do an occasional YouTube search on David Angelo's stand-up, because he's a stand-up comedian, on YouTube. And I was really, really excited when I saw him reappear. And I mean, it wasn't like he went away. Obviously, he was doing stuff and his career was moving forward the whole time. But reappeared to me on YouTube fall 2012, doing something called E-Economics, a YouTube channel and vodcast where David talks about economics, current events in a language many of us would be very comfortable with. This clip is from episode 5, which actually featured a little puppet show.
Today's topic, the trillion-dollar coin. You know, I like to explain economic news in layman's terms so people can understand. But for this one, I actually feel like I'm teaching remedial kindergarten. I don't know how to dumb it down for adults this stupid, so I'm going to ask for some help from my friend Saki. Hey, Saki.
Hi.
So, Saki, the idea is that the Treasury can avoid the debt ceiling by using a loophole that lets them put any nominal value they want on platinum coins. So they can just mint a few trillion-dollar coins and use those instead of issuing new debt, and then we're in the clear. But that's stupid. I know. Why bother with the platinum? Why not just write it on a paper plate? Oh, you mean like this? Yeah, look at that, $1 trillion. I mean, hey, what's the difference, right? Yeah, I know, you're right. Why stop there? I mean, why not just make it $10 trillion? Yeah, that's a good idea. Let's make it $10 trillion. Look, here's $10 trillion now, huh? Yeah, that's good. I'm not very good at this puppet thing. See, with this new money, now we can pay off all our debts, and then, you know, I mean, why stop here? We can mail everyone in the country a paper plate that says $10 trillion on it. We'll all be trillionaires. Isn't that a good idea? No, that's stupid. But people still think it's a clever option. There's nothing clever about it. It's the oldest trick in the book. It's money out of thin air. It's debasing the currency. This is how the Romans ended their empire. It's not a novel solution. And frankly, the intellectuals in this country suck.
So be sure to visit schoolsexproject.com and look at the show notes for this episode for all the relevant links to, of course, subscribe to E-Economics. And I'll also throw David Angelo's website up there. It's davidangelo.info in case you do not look at show notes. But in addition to doing this, David is an Emmy-nominated writer for The Jimmy Fallon Show, and we're actually going to start our discussion here. Already in progress, we were talking about a show on Fox News called Red Eye. Not the typical Fox News fare, a show on which David appears occasionally. So that's about it. We'll get started. Here we go.
You know, I go on Red Eye. It's the show they do at 3 a.m. with Greg Gutfeld.
Yeah.
I mean, I go on it when I'm in New York. That's my only time when I'm out there. It's always fun, though.
It is fun. It's, you know, it's a very chaotic show, those panel shows on television. I mean, Red Eye is, I think, one of the best, but they're putting a lot of people up on those panels.
Yeah, well, I mean, 5 days a week, you got to fill an hour. It's tough. It's tough to do. Tough booking.
Yeah, but the reason why you are here today, even though I have known your name for a long time, I was very, very excited to see you appear on YouTube with a new channel called Economics. Is that how you're pronouncing it?
Yeah, that's how I'm pronouncing it. It's Economics, but with a little E in the as a prefix, which is, to signify my digital relevancy.
Right. So you're in an industry, the entertainment industry, and a place, Hollywood, that's not really known for its economic literacy. I'm interested in how you were introduced to this school of economic thought. I certainly wouldn't guess that it happened in college.
Well, no, but I mean, also, nowhere is really known for their economic literacy. I mean, everywhere I've lived, it's been,
I would say Hollywood is particularly bad from what I see on TV.
They are pretty bad. You know, it's a weird environment out here. They're kind of like, they have this, you can smoke marijuana in a kindergarten classroom, but you can't jaywalk. They have all these weird kind of regulations and rules. But yeah, it's definitely a more left-leaning culture, obviously.
So that being said, how were you? What was your process? What was your wake up to these ideas of the free market? Let's say.
Well, like a lot of people, I was a rambunctious youth, and I had an interest in those types of things. Like, I don't think I would have ever called myself a Marxist or a socialist or anything like that. But I was definitely kind of a very liberal person. But I didn't know anything about money because I had no money. You know, when you're a student, right, that's the way it works. So that's kind of like that's not important. Money isn't everything. That's like the idea in when you're young. But then as you get older, I started making money. And then you realize, to people who are taking your money and what money is, and it's not everything, yes, in your life, but it's kind of plays an important role in everything. And I think then once you realize, once you start to learn more about economics, just how it works, I think it almost, you have to by default kind of go into this one sort of you veer off from the liberal ideology of it, which is not even based in economics. It's just idealism and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, the presentation that we get in school, when you hear things like free markets and lack of government intervention, I mean, I just have these stories seared into my mind. I think probably some in high school, but mostly in college, of just children in factories and fingers being found in meat. And, that's what most people associate with the free market or anything that's outside of the Keynesian school of economics. But, as far as Austrian versus Keynesian in economics, those aren't terms that most people are ever introduced to at any point in their lives, even if they're, economics majors in college. So as far as this goes, as far as your presentation on economics on YouTube, has this realization of, how all this works, has it shifted you politically? Like you said, you were more oriented towards the left originally. Like, how would you describe yourself today?
I don't think it's actually changed that much. It's not, it wasn't like I did a 180 or anything. It was just, I added to what I knew. And I still have a lot of the same beliefs I had before, but I didn't used to know anything about economics, I guess. I mean, I took one, we never had any class in any of my public school through grade 12. At no point, I mean, we were required to do, five art classes, every physical education, all this stuff. And the one thing that is the most important topic in everyone's lives, I mean, all anyone does, they devote their whole life, they spend all week, it's all about making money. and they don't talk about it at all in school. It's like the one thing right. everyone needs to know. It's almost bigger than math because, you know, I'm not going to go around. I'm not doing calculus. I'm not doing all this stuff. It's like, this is the basic stuff. And I took one class I graduated early from college. And the way I did that was by doing a summer, semester or something. And I took an economics class at UMass Boston, which I'm from the Boston area. And we talked about economics, but it wasn't like Keynesian or Austrian or anything. It was just economics. It was all Keynesian, but it wasn't labeled that way. It was just, this is economics.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was so confusing. And like, none of it made sense. I remember just being like, what is this guy talking? And I thought like, I just didn't understand it. And it was just that it didn't make sense. It really didn't make sense.
So, you know, you said that your beliefs, you know, starting from that experience, or maybe like a little bit of this realization that, this is a class that, you know, this material is being presented and it doesn't make any sense. And getting from there to a place in life where you're making money and you start to become more aware and perhaps even more sensitive to, you know, money being taken away from you. Why do you think, even if you have to speculate a little bit here, why do you think that nobody else in your town almost seems to get that? Or seems to be aware of that, or seems to care about that? In fact, some of the wealthiest people out there are clamoring for more of their money to be taken away. What do you think that's about?
I don't know, honestly. I mean, I've always been like a super cheapskate, and I'm a penny pincher, and so it's a little bit different for me, I think, than most people. Just as even when I had no money, I was always going. I'm a coupon clipper type personality.
Sure.
So I'm maybe a little more sensitive to it, but I think a lot of people out here, you know, they're not that interested. They don't care because they do have a lot of these jobs are pretty stressful and demanding, and you don't want to, you hire someone who deals with this and they just take it. They take your check, they process it, they give you a check, and you know, you have a business manager, maybe you have your agent, and they handle all that stuff. And you deal with your job, which is pretty, it's a pretty demanding job. You know, I will like make that excuse for them. It's hard to like do this stuff. You know, when you work at, you know, the mall or something, when you clock out, you have the rest of the day to do whatever you want. You don't really have to think about work. This is just 24 hours. So I think it is like, I could excuse it on that level where I think just people don't care. They really have no interest, and then they hear what they kind of accept what they hear in the news or from their friends, and then they just go with it because they don't really care that much. They have what they perceive as bigger problems. And then there's other people I think that they maybe do know, but they, just for public relations reasons, the more famous people still kind of support that just because it's popular. It's always more popular to be that guy, you know?
It has the appearance of being like altruistic.
Yeah, just so, like populist and just kind of being like, well, yeah, this is, I want to help everyone. This is like the big celebrity stuff. I mean, the people who make a lot of money are not even those stars. And I mean, there are a lot of the ones you don't hear about them, but there is actually a pretty big contingent of people who do fight taxes and are not in that mindset, but they're kind of the business end of the, of show business.
Yeah.
They are out here. And even the stars, everyone, they all, like I actually did a video about it where they all have tax avoidance schemes. They have them all set up. They just don't realize it's tax avoidance, or maybe they do, but they're not putting it together that what they're doing is, you know, similar to whatever a Wall Street CEO is doing, which is they have these corporations and they have all these
loan out corporations.
Tax shelters set up. I'm sure Michael Moore and whoever the other examples of that type of person are, I'm sure they all have that kind of stuff set up for themselves.
This is like an insight that a lot of people don't have, where I found your channel could provide this look into how things work out there. Because, I mean, I think, David, that as much as the mainstream media is shaping how people feel about economic and social issues, that Hollywood is really responsible for doing that too. So it was pretty revelatory to hear about these loan out corporations where all of these people who are talking about, higher taxes for everybody else actually have, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's not immoral. It's exactly what I would do if I was in that situation, but they're not walking the walk that they're talking.
Right. Basically. There's some hypocrisy to it.
So for us, anywhere outside of that city, and I'm in New Hampshire, Hollywood seems like a kind of a dark and scary place. Have you ever tried to take what you do on economics and share it with, people that you work with or people you do business with? Or do you think that maybe a person's survival in that industry kind of depends on like not talking about that stuff?
No, I mean, I don't think it's that. Because people don't really have good rebuttals to me on an economic argument. Like, I think the time where you would get in trouble, a lot of people out here know about that. And like every meeting I go to, they've seen it. They've, that it's not really like a big deal. But I think if you got into like crazy, if you started being like if you were a religious conservative type and had views like that, I think that would be a big like impedance on your career out here. But I don't think the money stuff, because people, they can't come up with an argument against you, they're just gonna kind of, they have no real interest in it.
One thing that I noticed just from conversations with a lot of high net worth people who had these more left-wing ideas about economics, I'm interested in your thoughts on this. It seemed like people were clutching onto this belief that the government had to do good things. And they had no say in the fact that all of this money was disappearing from them, regardless of what they can protect, because even protecting what you make costs money to do that. So this holding out for a hope that government can be good and I can participate, that altruistic fantasy that a lot of people have, regardless, I mean, that's everywhere. That's all across the country. We saw that in, what's his name? Guy from Nebraska. Buffett, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean,
that's
the thing about him. It's, look at all the money he's gotten from taxes. He owned Goldman Sachs. He owns Bank of America. He owns Wells Fargo. He owns the rating agency Moody's. I mean, he benefits from he has a net benefit from your taxes. So whatever he pays out, he's getting more back. So there's some like ulterior motives.
And what I'm saying is that it seems, from my experience anyway, that people are creating this fantasy about what government can be if it just had more money.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's I'm always amazed at that. I think maybe I had that view at some point. And I had a discussion with Noam Chomsky once, because we're both from the same town, Lexington, Massachusetts. And I'm talking to him about I forget what it was. It might have been taxes. And he had basically the same viewpoint, which was like, we need the government for this, this, and this. And I was like, you have about 100 books you've written about how the U.S. government does evil things all over the world. You know, and I was in the position with Noam Chomsky of having to convince him that the U.S. government does bad stuff. It was very weird, but they don't really have the connection. I think when you, change was when I commuted. I worked in Connecticut when I was living in New York City, and it was 2 hours each way, my commute.
Ugh.
And I did it on the commuter rail. And that was like, that exposure to humanity, it's like, look, people are not, this is not we're not near a utopia here if we just get the right government agency in place. This is a disaster. You know, the more exposure you have with just what is out there, what humanity is, I think that's, I was just thinking about that this morning, how like, they say there's no conservative comedians. And I kind of agree with that, but that's because it's so much harder to make a conservative laugh because they understand how the world works. You know, it's not all whimsy and bullshit. It's like, you know, you have to, they're sitting there with full understanding, maybe. I mean, not all conservatives. I hate using these terms because they're so useless. But when you're just aware of how terrible everything is, it's harder to have jokes appeal to you.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like from what I see, I sent you just when I was preparing a package about my show, I sent you this show that I did about Bill Maher, right? Where he seems like he can just go out there as somebody who's more oriented towards the left, regardless of what he claims, and really just phone it in with these guaranteed laugh lines about Sarah Palin is dumb, you know, people who don't believe in. I mean, that's pretty much all the material is composed of. And, you know, it doesn't make people think, it doesn't challenge people. But that's what most comedy seems to be, is like these guaranteed laughs to a crowd that's just eating out of your hand.
Right. And I mean, I don't go out and I don't talk about politics really. And I don't do that kind of stuff because no one ever wants to hear it. I mean, and it's just obnoxious when you're at a comedy club and someone doesn't, you know, they're there for, well, I was used to, at one point I was just complaining about the audience. That was my lack. Where it was like, what do you guys want? You want me to entertain you and all, you don't do anything all day. I'm out there. You're all, you come here to get away from what, you know, when I lived in New York, especially, it was like, oh yeah, in Brooklyn, everyone, you know, they're 25 years old. Their parents pay all their bills. It's like, oh yeah, you come down here to unwind. It's like, what am I supposed to do for them? I don't know, for providing a service. But in America, you know, some people, they go to a club and it's very expensive. You know, it's like $60 of you and someone else to go to a comedy club. And you just want to have these kind of easy things. And I think some of that liberal narrative it works there. And it's much harder for me, where I would have to do, if I wanted to tell a joke about politics or the economy, I would have to do a setup that was 5 minutes of exposition explaining something that they should have learned in high school.
Well, that's why I brought that up about as far as Bill Maher and a lot of people who are out there doing this safe comedy. And I'll end today with this. Now, I've followed your work for a long time. One of the things that I would say I'd learned from you is about the value of taking risks. And I hope this isn't offensive to character. It must like be very annoying to listen to a non-comedian like talk about your comedy. But there's stuff that's funny, there's stuff that's not funny, and there's stuff that's like so not funny that it's fucking hilarious. Right? And you had these jokes that I would just, I would be on the floor. The stuff that you used to do on Red Bar, it really left an imprint on me. Like, this is what you have to do. This has to be risks. Like, you can talk about poop and dicks and get laughs every time, right? People will just laugh because whatever, it makes them uncomfortable. But I can't imagine going up on a stage to try out that material just with a hostile crowd who expects to laugh.
Yeah, this isn't painting a good picture of my act, but
no, but it's great. I'm telling you, like I was so excited to get you on the show because I'm such a big fan, and I just think that the stuff you do is incredibly risky, and I really think it's admirable.
It's
awesome.
You know, I used to do. I think it started. I have huge animosity to the general public. I don't know what it is. Right. It's just, you know, it's. My every time I go out, it's some one thing or the next. Traffic. I mean, how anyone has a positive view of the world is beyond me. So I think it started out initially in a kind of a bad motive of me just being a dick to everybody. Mm. But then I started to like a lot of these kind of dumber jokes I was doing. Like, I genuinely did like them. And I also preferred it because if I ever did a story or if I was talking about, like, I would go up there and literally be like, something that happened to me that week, and I'd go up and I'd have, like, you know, the conversational style where I, you know, this thing happened, you know, it was really it was kind of eye-opening, it changed my life for this reason, I realized this about me. And then I'd get off stage and someone would be like, hey, you know, Dane Cook does that bit or something like that, you know. It's like, really?
Mm.
That's the, yeah, everyone always has, like, no matter what you do, it's like someone else is doing it, so it's very hard to, you know, just differentiate in that category. So I was like, oh, fine, I'll just do these jokes. And to be honest, a lot of people are doing, I go out now, I see a lot of people do that kind of stuff. Whereas when I started, it was not, you know, I got a lot of groans. I don't get it anymore. but it was definitely a rough, choppy waters early on.
So you're still doing stand-up, and where else can people see you, hear about you, find out about you?
I don't know. Jesus.
You know, plug away.
Right. Well, you got to go to the YouTube channel, which is E, economics with an E at the front. You don't really get that from the pronunciation. It's kind of, in some ways, a terrible name, but it's also good for a Google search. But YouTube search, it just automatically says, you meant economics, and then it doesn't come up. So,
yeah, two E's.
Two E's. I have the Twitter. You got to go on Twitter. DW Angelo. Delta Whiskey Angelo. DW Angelo. On Twitter. That's where I'm most active. That's where I really put in the reps.
Yeah, I can give the crowd a sample right now, too, because I have the page open. If you don't mind.
Go ahead.
This was David Angelo 3 hours ago. Okay. Judge strikes down New York's large drink ban. Says New Yorkers need larger cups to urinate into on the subway. I enjoyed that one. And I could go on and on. Folks, you should go and you should follow David Angelo on Twitter. Okay, so that's Twitter. What else?
You know, that's kind of it. I don't really have I don't do the social media stuff that well. And I do some shows, but I haven't lately, but I'm trying to get out more. You know what? At the Bridgetown Comedy Festival in Portland next month, and also at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, Texas next month in April.
I assume that's Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon, yes. Is that right? Oregon, yes. Wow, I never really put that together, that it was in Oregon.
Well, there's one in Maine, too, that I'm sure you're familiar with if you grew up out here.
I am familiar with that one. I just kind of didn't think about the state of Oregon. People never say it. They always say Portland.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Well, there's a whole state around it.
Yeah, Oregon. What a weird name, too.
It's not how it's pronounced, either. It's Oregon. That's how they say it. I think, like, Oregon.
Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, anyway, David, thank you so much. I'll let you go. I'll let you get back to work. But really enjoyed this. And I hope as the channel progresses, maybe we can do this again in the future. Maybe I can get you on a panel.
Oh, I would love to do a panel.
Thank you so much again for your time. And best of luck to you, sir.
Thanks a lot, Brett. And great job with the show. It's fantastic.
You know, because I haven't had great work history, right? At my last job, I worked at this place, and we were responsible for what we would do is we would package linens. Do you know what I'm talking about? Linens, when I say that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, we'd get the sheets in and the pillowcases from the manufacturer, and then it was the company's job to put those together and get them ready for the shelf. And you know, they weren't any good at it the way they did it there. What they did was they would just kind of jam it in the packaging. They would just jam it right in there and then kind of send it out. And business wasn't doing very well at all. And eventually, after about 6 months, the company finally folded, which is when they started to make real money. Come on.
That was real good. Oh, my God.
Something, right? And that's
Holy
when they made
shit.
That's when they started. That's when they started to make the real money.
Because they were a linen company.
Because they were. That's
and
when they
the
folded.
Company folded. Brilliantly done. Well worded.
Oh God, that's a gem. And in reality, inflation hurts the poor and the middle class the most. I'll let you in on a little secret. The rich guy in the Maserati who owns 10,000 shares of Exxon, he doesn't really care if gas is $5 a gallon. But you should, and that's why you should know why those prices are going up. Okay, thanks for watching. I appreciate it. Please share this video. God knows I need the clicks, you know. I hear people make a living off this. Must be nice. I wouldn't know. Is this thing even on? Oh, good God almighty.
Random crowd of people. Yeah. Do you like School Sucks Podcast? Yeah. Even more than school. Yeah. How'd you like to see the show produce more content? Yeah. Reach a bigger audience. Yeah. How'd you like better production quality? confusion to see all of these things happen? That's okay, because now it's easier than ever to help out Scoopsock. Oh, I just pooped a little.
I'm sorry, voiceover guy, did you say you just pooped a little?
Yeah, talking in this voice all the time puts a tremendous amount of stress on the human body. It's okay, I can keep going.
Look, I can probably do this myself.
Hi, this is Brett, and now it is easier than ever to support this show. Why? Because of the internet. Get on there. Go to schoolstartsproject.com, make a user account on our new website, join some groups, start some groups. Anything educational is great. Participate in our forums, make friends, message new friends made on that site. And if you want, you can join the AV Club. You do get a lot of extra content, and it helps the show. Please go to Twitter. At School Sucks Show is how to find us. Follow us. We're doing stuff there. Go to YouTube. School Sucks Podcast is our username. And like us on Facebook. Thank you so much. I hope you continue to enjoy the show.